Welcome to Pinnacle Perspectives on BFM. I'm Philip C. I'm joined today by Dr. Ismet Yusof, Chief Executive Officer of the Minority Shareholders Watch Group, or MSWG, an organization at the forefront of advocating good governance, transparency, and the protection of minority investor rights in Malaysia. Now, in recent months, the K&M case has sparked significant debate among market participants, regulators, and board members. Beyond the headlines, it raises deeper questions about how effectively minority shareholders are being protected, the robustness of our governance frameworks, and what this means for the overall integrity of Malaysia's corporate landscape. Today, we'll explore with Dr. Ismet what the K&M episode reveals about current governance practices, what risk or precedents it sets, and what corporate leaders should take away from it as they steer their own organizations forward. Dr. Ismet, thank you so much for joining us. Could you set the stage for our listeners? How would MSWG characterize the K&M case in terms of its significance to Malaysia's corporate governance landscape, you know, compared with past high-profile disputes?
Well, MSWG sees the K&M case as one of the most interesting governance episodes in the recent years, because it was not just about boardroom disagreement like a normal issues on governance, but it involved major decision on control, dilution, and asset value being made, with limited clarity for shareholders to make an informed decision. So it is very much interesting. And all of this unfolded in a PN17 environment previously, when the company was in one, highly leveraged, distressed, under intense creditor scrutiny. So when governance concerns surface at a company in this condition, the implication extend beyond K&M. I guess it also affects the overall ecosystem and how shareholders being seen in terms of its fairness to themselves.
Mm. And just some context, this is really, as you said, K&M placed under PN17. And to kind of rescue itself, its proposed turnaround plan was the disposal of its prized German subsidiary, Deutsche K&M GmbH, which controls Borsig GmbH. And so the sale, which was about close to 1.3 billion ringgit, was intended to clear debt and inject working capital, right? That was the underlying concern. When you look at this transaction, why did this trigger so much conflict?
I think at this juncture, we are not we truly understand the fact that there is a need to commercially dispose the subsidiaries, because as like you rightly mentioned, to clear off the outstanding debts that the company have. But I think the issue is very much in terms of how the process is being made, and the information that has been provided to the shareholders in terms of valuation, in terms of how do they derive in for such amount of disposal. Those are surrounding issues that we are looking into and trying to seek more clarity from the company itself.
And so if you unpack where you found the challenges in the process and the lack of clarity given around disposal, at what points, where were the pinch points? Where were the points of contention throughout the whole process then? Because what you're kind of saying is the actual action is not necessarily the problem. It was really how it was engaged with the shareholders. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess at this juncture, as a shareholders, I think we just wanted to know a bit more in terms of how the company made through that process of trying to dispose the subsidiary that they have. So we are looking into a proper circular that need to be given to us, and also to the valuation in terms of independent advisors' view with regards to that disposal. Throughout that process, I think we are trying to understand a bit more and trying to see how the company actually made that proposal to the shareholders. It is definitely a concern of ours, and I think for many of the minority shareholders as well, whether or not such disposal is actually fair and true to the value itself.
Were there any early warning indicators or governance red flags that you saw that would have given you a sense that this was likely to take place?
Well, there's quite a few, which I felt that the most significant one is when the company being in under PN17 itself. So that itself actually is indeed a concern. And when the company submitted the regularization plan to Bursa, and when Bursa highlighted those issues at that time when they were still listed, I think that was definitely a concern that triggered a lot of minority shareholders in terms of looking at the company.
And of course, one of the biggest issues is that the disposable qualified as a major transaction, which under Bursa listing rules requires prior approval, right, when the company is listed, especially as you say under PN17. And then the regulator initiated legal action to stop the EGM called by K&M's shareholders, arguing that convening that EGM breached regulatory requirements. Could you just expand on that a bit more?
Yeah, I think the action of Bursa is very much to protect the listing rules and the requirements under the listing rules. So, to that regard, that is very much important to make sure that proper issuance of circular and investment advice report to be given circulated to the shareholders. Again, it's a matter of making sure that investors, shareholders particularly, are able to make an informed decision in situation especially of such where you are making a major disposal of your subsidiary. So that entire process is very much needed and ensured. I'm unable to comment because I think there's still an ongoing legal proceeding on that matter. But pretty much but it went through an EGM process already. And shareholders has already approved to that regard. But at the EGM, we did raise that concern in terms of how the company actually derived to that valuation and derived into that sale, and a lot of other issues that has been discussed and thrashed out at the EGM, for which the company responded to our concern and issues.
Yeah, expand on that, right? What was the company's response when you highlighted all these issues at the EGM?
I think one of the biggest thing that they clarified is the need to make this disposal. I think we are all aware because of the necessity of clearing the creditors as well as some part of working capital. We asked the viewpoints of independent directors as well whether or not that due proper process has been discussed and deliberated at the board level. They responded positively that it has been going through that process. I think the company was also trying to give was also giving us an assurance that this whole entire process will take a bit of time for the company to revive back. So they asked the shareholders to go through that process with them, and perhaps they will be able to turn it around. So we will have to see in the next couple of years whether or not the company will be able to turn it around.
We're going to take a quick break and return after these messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I have with me Dr. Ismet Yusof from the Minority Shareholders Watch Group, or MSWG, as we unpack the implications of the K&M case on corporate Malaysia. You know, when you take a step back and look at the lessons here, right? I mean, how does this episode really illustrate the vulnerabilities of companies with really complex debt structures and distressed balance sheets? I mean, we talked about PN70 as an example. And which sectors do you feel really, shine a spotlight on these challenges?
You see, the biggest challenge of this process, especially when it comes to debt restructuring and when creditors, come knocking on the company's door, minority shareholders has always been, the most bottom of the barrel. At the end of the day, creditors will definitely be getting what they needed, what they came in for. And as minority shareholders, the question is how much protection is given to us and in terms of protecting our interests. Much need to be relooked at in that sense, how we can be, our interests and the value of what we have invested can be protected. I think this is where the whole framework of protection of minority interests in this regard needs to be further enhanced.
And when you look at this framework, where do you see are the drawbacks? Where do you see are the gaps, right? Because I presumably there is one in place. And when you do that assessment, what really needs to be done to kind of avoid this kind of saga from appearing again, or at least put some guardrails around it?
One of the most important thing again is to not just mandate, but also to further enforce the minimum disclosure standards to all shareholders. That is very much important, so that shareholders can make an informed decision. There's also need of further enhancement on mandatory oversight or mandatory independent oversight actually on this sort of decisions. This is to avoid situation where shareholders feel that the control dynamics are, you know, driving decisions. And also, I think this is where shareholders collectively, we need to come together and further scrutinize each of such proposal that have been given by the company and collectively see whether or not it is actually in the best interest of the company and also in the best interest of us as shareholders collectively.
And so if you talk about that challenge, right, about the real some structural examples you were referring to just now, do you feel that we made progress when it comes to really just driving that spirit of shareholder democracy or proper governance? Because in the progress, you know, since the inception of MSWG, do you think progress has been made, or and is this just a blip or just symptomatic of something really structurally bigger problem that's emerging now?
I think more, I have to credit shareholders' activism in Malaysia, because there's more and more activism can be seen in surface. A lot more issues and concerns has been raised by minority shareholders in from the EGM floor or EGM floor. In any of the situation of, you know, corporate transaction, debt structuring, disposal, for example, you know, I can see a lot of minority shareholders stood up and asked relevant, pertinent questions to the management, to the board. And this is very much welcome. And I guess with the further enhanced disclosures requirement that the regulators have set in place, and as well as, you know, companies being more transparent on these issues, it is very much helpful so that, you know, minority shareholders can actually exercise their rights and duties to the company. But what is more fundamental also at the same time is that companies must be willing to be able to have that dialogue session with the shareholders. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it is the interest, it's a collective interest from the company management and board against us minority shareholders. I think it's a collective interest for all.
You know, that I fully empathize with you. I will say that there's sometimes companies that will say that sometimes minority shareholders are not fully educated, and maybe that's also a circular challenge here. How do we kind of find the balance of the need to protect minority shareholders while not, you know, interfering with what some would argue legitimate restructuring strategies, right, put forward by the board? Because while K&M was, in that sense, room for a heavy dispute, I think there are some other cases where legitimate restructuring is required, and sometimes some would argue that minority shareholders can be an unnecessary impediment.
Yeah, this is where, like I mentioned earlier, there are situations where restructuring and sometimes to a certain extent that restructuring can make commercial sense. So that finding that right balance to see whether or not it makes sense on certain transaction is where more professional guidance and advice needed to provide that clarity. This is where MSWG will move forward, play a more enhanced role, where we wanted to provide that clarity and information for minority shareholders to help guide them in terms of understanding what is being proposed by the company. We are not going to sway their decisions, but at the very least, when they make their decision, they understand on the decision that they're going to make based on the facts that's been given by the company.
When you look at all the other actors, you know, that kind of led to this deal, from the creditors, advisors, regulators, even other than major shareholders, right? Do they have a part to play? And in your view, could you just expand a bit how those respective actors could play a part in influencing the direction in the right way?
Yeah, I mean, creditors naturally exert strong influence in distress, but alignment between debt and equity interest should have been sought much earlier. Advisors could have insisted on higher disclosure standards and fairness process. I would have to say regulators have set a very strong framework, but companies and advisors might uphold governance principle without waiting for enforcement. So better coordination among all parties, these gatekeepers early in the process, definitely could have reduced any escalation.
And I guess why I'm also wondering, right, because I think we don't think of the others, right? And so, and generally they are kind of hidden in the periphery. It's always the contention between board or Bursa in this case here and the minority shareholders, right? I guess, you know, what is needed, right, to get the other actors more involved then? You know, is there some pressure needed, some mandate, some regulatory required needed to be imposed on them as well then?
I think a proper guidance on the expectation of each of these actors need to be codified and clarified. Be it whether it is under regulatory guidelines or even at the stage of being a best practice. I've pushed my comments on this matter. Perhaps there can be a bit more clarity, particularly perhaps through the Malaysian Code of Corporate Governance, as it's now going through that process of reviewing, for which the role of these gatekeepers should be included in the code and also be further clarified and enhanced, so that everyone is pretty much aware of their role and duties that they had, not just to the company, but also to the shareholders as well.
And in your assessment, when you look at the K&M saga, is the listing becoming a governance loophole?
Well, we do see a few companies being delisted, and for which, of course, they're being delisted in different methods and ways. Some going through privatization, some going through delisting through process of PN17. Again, different permutations. But of course, our challenge is what happened next to the shareholders when the company being delisted. Will it lead to less scrutiny because of, availability of information, shareholders meetings and etc. That has always been a concern to us, and we would continue to monitor this, particularly for companies that no longer listed, and what will continue to happen to them.
And not only delisting, right, but usually a precursor of this is that the company is under distress. And in your observations, some would argue or actually observe that there is a significant erosion of minority shareholder protections, especially during distress periods, especially companies like this, right? Is there evidence to support that?
For a company that is being delisted, yes. I mean, access of information is definitely limited compared to those who are listed. It is definitely a concern for which we have also received a lot of complaints and feedback from minority shareholders of companies that has been delisted. It is definitely a concern, and we hope that companies would still continue to uphold transparency despite that it's continued after it's been delisted.
And there's also a lot of concern that there is that this behavior could set a precedent, right, for future action similar to this. Do you share that concern? Do you see this actually emerging in other parts? And actually, especially when you look at case studies in other parts of the world, when these things are let go, right, in your view, does this set a precedent for others to follow suit? And how can you avoid that?
Well, I do hope that this does not become a precedent or there won't be any such cases anymore in terms of any of the governance lapses. And I do believe that the regulators and also the exchange is taking all the necessary steps in terms of protecting the integrity of the capital market and also the guidelines and rules that they have. And having done that, I would believe that our capital market will still have that level of confidence in terms of its integrity. And we hope that it will continue to be a very, very conducive environment for investors to continue investing.
How do you look at it, right? Do you feel like when you see these things, does this call for greater scrutiny over board appointments, over the composition of the board of directors? Does this make the call clearer for a high proportion of independent, non-executive directors actually in companies? And should they have different standards at different levels of distress, PN17 and such?
Yes, I think it's very, very much important on two parts for directors. Number one, scrutiny of who should be appointed as an independent director. This is where MSWG is pushing for the appointment of directors to be tabled for shareholders to decide based on special resolution, no more ordinary resolution. That means 75% and above approval rate before the said independent directors can be appointed to be an independent director. It is very, very much important to ensure that the right person, the right fit is being put up to be an independent director so that they can act in the best interest of the company as a whole and not in the interest of a particular shareholders. Secondly, is all about the training and the capacity of the directors, continuous professional development that they need to go through. These sort of issues can be pretty much technical for certain directors. I think we are talking about transaction, we are talking about dilution, valuation. So directors, especially independent directors, and those that does not come from the capital market ecosystem, needs to be going through a specific training programs so that they be able to understand, appreciate, and challenge these sort of issues whenever they've been tabled to them. I think that's very much important.
Dr. Ismet, thank you so much for your time. That was Dr. Ismet Yusof, Chief Executive Officer of the Minority Shareholders Watch Group, or MSWG. I'm Philip C., BFM 89.9.